Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Cal Fritzy. I trust everybody is doing well today. I hope so. It's a beautiful day out there. Go out and enjoy it after you listen to me, of course. I have a few program announcements I'm going to share with you later, and that is, primarily, ladies and gentlemen, I'm prime time. I am back in prime time. I'm going to announce with you a couple of changes I'd make to the show. I will do that a little later in the program, but I really am excited about today's program. I have a wonderful guest, and his name is Randy Noble. He is an author. He has published, his latest publication is an absolutely fantastic read, The Rose of Norwich. And I probably muffed that up already. And Randy's on the line, and he's listening to me, and he's going to not be too happy with me. I'm sorry. But The Rose of Norwich. I read that book. I cried. It is a fantastic read. I am honored to have Randy on the show with me today. Randy is a self-published author. He has written 5 books. Beyond the Veil, Shining Star, The Promise, Driven by the Wind, and The Rose of Norwich. He has sent these books over to Iran, which is his inspiration. He is an inspiring writer. He is inspired by the spirit of the people in Iran. These people are what motivate him. The books, like I say, are beautiful. The Rose of Norwich is what we'll be discussing today. And with that, I would like to bring on my guest, Randy. And Randy, welcome to Red Fox Blogger, and thank you for being here.
It is a pleasure, Kel, to be on your program today, to be a voice for my friends in Iran. Thank you so much for that.
It is an absolute honor because I read this book. It moved me to a point. Some places I would laugh and some places I would literally weep. It's a very, very moving story. It's a very inspiring story. The characters really stayed with me. They have names, but they're my friends in my heart, I feel. Bahara, Zainab, all these characters, they jump to you. They jump at you right out of the pages. It is the type of book that you read and everything comes to life. You can practically smell the roses, and you can hear the violins playing as they're described in that book. Randy, what inspired you to write this particular story?
Well, it's based on my very dear friends in Iran that I talk to online, I chat with, I even Skype with. And these are real people. The dream of hope and freedom for them is to be sitting where you're sitting, Kel. To be sitting where I'm sitting. This is why I call it the Rose of Nowruz, the Persian New Year, Nowruz, dreams of hope and freedom. And so Bahara is based on a woman's rights advocate who is now spending the next 6 years in Evin prison for standing up for the rights of women. Her name, too, is Behera. You probably heard about her if you went on any website, Behera Hadayat. She was part of the Million Signatures campaign. And her character jumped out at me because she wants freedom for women in Iran. And so when I think of the Rose of Nowruz, I think of Behera. Another twist on the character Behera is the violin playing. Now, what's that based on? I have a friend in Tehran. Her name is Elnaz. She is a real violin player. She plays for the Tehran Symphony Orchestra. This is her life. And her passion for playing the violin became part of my book. And so it's based on real people that I talk with almost every day.
These are a compilation of characters of all the people that you've actually met, of course. You have, there's one character in particular that I find rather intriguing, and that is Hattie. That is Behera's friend that she accompanies on vacation with both their families. Hattie is a very interesting character, and his conversion to Christianity and his disclosure of that with Behera, that kind of left her a little unnerved. And do you suppose Hattie was a huge influence in Behera's decision to do what she did in the end, and that was to engage in the protest?
Hattie was a tremendous influence on her because Behera didn't know what to do with her feelings. She knew her father really didn't like her playing violin. You see, in Islam, especially the Shiite version of Islam in Iran, they think that musical instruments are a distraction from the straight path following Allah. So they discourage violin playing. Okay, Behera loves the violin. It is her whole world, her whole inspiration. It's how she copes with the pressure of living in Iran. So she has no real relationship with her father. When she meets Hadi and finds out that he feels the same way that she does about the oppression and fear and the way the government treats people, she connects with him instantly. And she really has strong feelings. But when Hadi says to her, "Behera, I have found a peace and a love I never knew before as a Muslim, and I've become a Christian," it frightens her. Because you see, Kel, in Islam, in Iran, it's called the sin of apostasy for any Muslim to convert to any other religion, especially Christianity. Mm-hmm. Ahmadinejad had a hatred for Christianity and the house church movement. So when she finds out that her really dear friend Hadi has converted, she's frightened for his life.
And that's the thing. And the book concentrates on this too. And of course, I brought this up when I did my special for Netta last week, in that during the televised debates, Ahmadinejad really showed his true colors and what he meant for Iran when he criticized his opponent for allowing his wife to be seen with him in public. Mm-hmm. That was really a catalyst for a lot of people in Iran to take to the streets, and thus the Green Movement was born, wasn't it?
That's true. Ahmadinejad makes no bones about his feelings for how he wants to treat the common average Iranian. You see the child executions that have gone on under his administration, and you see the number of political prisoners, bloggers, journalists. He wants to shut down any voice but the voice of the supreme leader, the voice of the Islamic Ayatollah. And so he's very critical of anything that does not conform to Islamic law, especially what you just mentioned. And by the way, your tribute to Netta, really, really beautiful. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you very much. I really enjoyed doing that for Netta. I want to talk about Netta in a minute, if you don't mind, because
sure.
She is the inspiration for this book, isn't she?
The video.
Like, she
of
is
Netta.
The true inspiration.
I recently did a dedication to Netta, too, on my Cross in the Desert video program. And there are some lyrics to a song in the Rose of Nowruz that fits Netta to a T. And yes, she is the inspiration. seeing her video 4 years ago absolutely changed my life. It changed everyone's life, you know, all over the world. They see that small little cell phone video of this young, beautiful Iranian girl, and I say beautiful because you know, you see her pictures, just beautiful, dying in the streets. Dying in the streets. When I saw that, it changed my life. The book is very much dedicated to her because the name Netta means voice, voice calling. And I say in my tribute, I still hear her voice calling. She's calling to you and me to stand up for the rights of Iranians. And so in the book, The Rose of Nowruz, there's a song that Behera writes for the stage play, the play about freedom. And The Rose of Nowruz is a song dedicated to Netta. There is a rose that was silenced, that was crushed, but it will grow again. The sun will rise, shine again. You gave us hope, gave us freedom, gave us life. Your life will never end. The rose will live again. The sun is going to shine again. The rose is going to live again. And so you have this song Behera writes in the violin. It's a song of hope for a free Iran one day. And, of course, that began with Netta.
And she absolutely, she did become the face of the Green Revolution that started in 2009 and went into 2010. I remember, you know, back then I really wasn't too familiar with a lot of things happening around the planet. I knew there were some issues going on, but I really wasn't quite aware of just how dire the situation was. In particular in Iran, I would watch the evening news and I would see these protests going on and I would see these people in the streets and they would be demanding things and I wasn't quite sure what they were doing. Like I say, I really wasn't quite aware. But then something changed. I saw footage of Netta Sultan. And I looked at, I couldn't believe my eyes. I was like, well, what am I looking at here? What is this? It really prompted me to start looking into what exactly is going on in Iran and what is this green movement or green revolution? What is this? And I looked into it. I couldn't keep myself away from the computer looking into what was going on in Iran and what these students were trying to accomplish and what they were doing and what Ahmadinejad was all about and the oppression that they were feeling and what Ahmadinejad meant to the people of Iran and why they were protesting for a re-election because they thought the election was rigged. And I'm pretty sure it was a rigged election.
Yeah.
There was absolutely no way that Ahmadinejad got in legitimately. This is what they were protesting. This is what they were doing. And I was sitting here in my comfy little easy chair looking at the news and watching these people actually get out there. And they're on the streets and they're saying, look, we have a voice. We're going to do something about this. God help us. And they were. And then that infamous footage of Netta, that just, I think that pretty much turned the entire world on its heel. And people really sat up and started paying attention as to what is going on over there. They are shooting protesters in the streets. Mm-hmm. These snipers were on the roofs, and they were literally picking people off. Live bullets. Mm-hmm. People were dying in the streets because they were standing up for freedom and they were standing up for their liberty. They were standing up for their rights. People were literally dying for it. And I think that's when it really hit me, Randy, is that we have it so easy over here with our freedoms and our democracies. And we just have to look over there to see what they're trying to accomplish, what they want, and what they deserve as human beings. So when I came across you, your book, and I immediately said to myself, I have to read this book. I have to read this book. And I am so grateful to you for graciously sending me a copy. It just took me to a place in my it really, really affected me. This is a book that, it's one of those books that you don't want to end. It's like a good movie. You know the end is coming, but you don't want it to end. You want it to keep going, and you want it to keep going. It had that effect on me. Are you getting a lot of reaction from people regarding this particular book? Like, I know you have written very many books, but this one in particular, like I say, are you getting a lot of feedback, and what are people saying about it, and how does it make you feel when you get the feedback for this particular novel?
Well, first of all, thank you from my heart and for your kind words. And the feedback I'm getting, Kel, is amazing, because I have the privilege, with our technology, to forward the PDF files of my book, The Rose of Nowruz, to my friends that live in Iran. So when I send it to them, they want to read about what I think. They want to hear about what I say. And I have one friend that is a big inspiration, along with Netta, for this book. She's a real person. Her name is Atifi. Atifi is studying French language, and she's an English supervisor, and she lives in Tehran. She wrote a little episode about her feelings about wearing the hijab one hot, sultry day on a bus. When she shared this story with me about how oppressed she felt sitting in the back of the bus because of the in Iran, the sexes are separated. The men sit in the front of this particular bus. The women have to sit in the back. This was a hot, sultry day. She was wearing her hijab. She was sweating. And as she shared this story with me, this became a big impetus for the book. And in fact, chapter two, "Is This What Islam Has Brought Us?" was the question she asked. And this became a big part of the book. Now, Atifi read my book just like you, and she lives right in the middle of what we're talking about. And Atifi says this: "I must say that every time that I read this book, I start crying for a while, and I want to shout, this is real. This is happening to us. Your book is amazing, a true explanation of what we tolerate here every day and night. And I want to thank you for every word that you wrote for us. Every book signing I go to, I share this with my friends." I have a story here from Atifi, which I'll share later, but from my blog, that will, it will do something within your heart of hearts, because she's describing an everyday life of an Iranian woman, and we'll do that later. But this is what Atifi says. Another friend of mine, Miriam, and I don't want to say too much about their names, their last names. That's very important. She says, I love the way of your writing, as if you are living here with us and know exactly what we are suffering from. This is what Miriam says, and I could go on. I am so humbled by my friends in Iran, and I wrote this for them, but I also wrote this for many other people in the world to bring attention to what's going on with my friends. And Atifi said one thing one time that motivates me to write this book. And she says, "Please, Randy, be our voice. This is why I'm doing what I'm doing today with you." Because Atifi wants someone to speak up for them, to speak up for them that can't speak up for themselves. And this is what I'm doing. And I'm so humbled by that. I've sent this book to human rights activists, one in particular, Caspian Manak, Nez's fiance, and other human rights activists in Canada and here in the United States. And so I'm trying to get the message out that we have a situation in Iran that human rights people need to know more about, to be more informed about, to speak out more about. Because my goal in all of this, Kel, is that they would have a better life. It's pure and simple. That's why I do it.
The people of Iran are a very, very, very special peoples. They're Persians. Mm-hmm. They have a very strong, rich, and noble history.
Yes.
So for them to undergo these drastic transformations within what they have, what they've lost. The people of Iran have lost so much under Ahmadinejad. Now we have a new leader in Iran.
Oh.
Do you have any hope that Iran will be transformed back to her former glory, or do you think that this is just another puppet of the Sharia?
You said it best right there, Kel. I'm going to quote what my friend in Iran did at a recent election. She said to me, as we were chatting on Yahoo, mullahs don't change. They are all the same. Most of my friends say the same thing. One president, the same as the other. He's a puppet, yes, of the Ayatollah. What's interesting about Rouhani is that he was ushered in with this claim of moderacy, with this claim of new dialogue with the West, with this claim of, I'm going to free some political prisoners. This was a master act of the Islamic regime to tout him in and tone down the people so there wouldn't be a repeat of 2009. And it worked. You notice there was no violence. There was, if any, no protest. They touted him in to tone it down, mm-hmm. to protect themselves, and it worked. But his message is really no different. He has to be approved by the Guardian Council. He is usually handpicked by the Supreme Leader, and he's very, very, very tied in with the views of the Supreme Leader. In fact, there's a story on the Internet going around about his son that committed suicide because of his extremism. So while Rouhani claims to be a moderate and claims to want some change, no.
Oh, that's exactly it. And that was, yeah, exactly, Randy. And that is an excellent point. Hassan Rouhani, he went on his campaign, and as part of his platform, he was campaigning on hope and prudence. And I don't know if the people of Iran are exactly buying that at all. And my understanding, too, is that Iran, he may be nothing more than stage dressing, for lack of a better phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Window dressing. He's window dressing, but it's actually the mullahs who control what happens in Iran as well, isn't it?
Well, what's happening here is that we have a problem with Iranians really under the pressure of sanctions. And they have Israel breathing down their neck about the nuclear program. And this is their strategy to make life better for the people, to somehow ease the sanctions a little bit, to talk more openly with the West. Okay? And so this is very dangerous because it's deceptive. But I have a humorous thing I want to say in all of this seriousness. I was saying about my friend in Iran. She knows that mullahs don't change, Kel. So her friend said, look, you've got to get out and vote. If you don't, you're going to lose your government benefits. So Iranians, when they come to the poll, a lot of times is out of coercion and fear. They could lose status on their visa, government benefits, if they don't vote. When they go there, their name is entered into a computer, and it's on their registration card, it is made certain that if they voted, there's a little star there that they voted. For their registration card to ever be looked at and an Iranian official's notice that they didn't vote is considered anti-government. So my friend, out of fear, went to the polls, right? She doesn't want to vote for any of the candidates. So she said, Randy, when it came time to write down the name of a candidate, I wrote down the name of my favorite rock star, and she wrote down Justin Bieber and left. And this is what she did, and I could not believe it. My friend put on the ballot for president of Iran, Justin Bieber. Wow. What do you say to that?
I thought that was brilliant, and I read that. I was thinking kudos to her. Like, that is just absolutely fantastic that she would do that.
And
but
I
you know
in the
what?
Blog,
that...
look. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, you know what, at least they're out there, and that is their protest vote. I thought that was brilliant. I mean, here in the West, what do? We go in, our protest vote is to mark every box with an X and put it in the ballot box, and we have essentially busted our ballot. But for them to have the audacity and the great audacity to do that leaves me in awe and admiration.
Wow, and she just blesses my heart. This is a very strong, courageous girl. And I think of my freedom and your freedom to vote for anyone we want to without coercion. I know we don't have a perfect system. We have all kinds of challenges to our freedom, but it's still the best freedom in the world. And my friend said, I'm tired of this. This is not who I believe in. Here's somebody I believe in, and I'm voting for it. And I wrote a blog about her because I think she's incredible.
Oh, absolutely. I want to talk about one character in particular, and that's Zeynab, and that's Bahara's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
How she is a very dark character, not dark in the sense of anything you know, under, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, she's a very old soul, rather. I should put it that way. She's very dark. She has a very old soul. She had seen pretty much since she was old enough to reason that there were things very seriously wrong. Zainab is quite a rebel, and Zainab is rather perplexing to Bahira some days. Zainab decided she just wasn't going to take it anymore, and I was reading in the book about her expulsion from Tehran University and her being stopped by the morality police and that being the final straw for her. And I'm not going to go into any further detail about Zainab's character and that aspect. How hard was it to write that character, Zainab in particular, because she was just so dark?
I wanted to contrast Bahira as this timid girl under the rule and discipline of her father. She's always been afraid, that is Bahira, to speak up, even though she sees things that destroy her. And her father is a government man. He's a university professor, so she is very afraid of him. I put a character like Zainab to contrast with Bahira. Zainab is a rugged individual, like an old soul, like you mentioned. Zainab is based on a few of my real friends in Iran that are atheists. And I just wanted to write about Zainab because Zainab represents someone she's not afraid to speak up, like Bahira. Zainab has lived life in the hard, fast lane of seeing so much oppression and fear. She's not afraid, but she's desperate. And that's why I wrote this character, because Zainab was going to have an effect to the point on Bahira, for Bahira to crawl out of this shell and say, I've had enough. I'm tired of what I see my friends going through. I'm not afraid anymore. And what happens during the book, and I won't give all this away, but there's a breaking point for Zainab. One day, on the way to school, she's stopped by the morality police, the Ghassir Shad. Now, the Ghassir Shad is a real group of people that drive around in a van making sure that women and men comply with the Islamic dress code. If you're a woman wearing your hijab improperly, if you have fingernail polish or anything out of the ordinary, you can get stopped, written up, arrested, and fined. And one day, this happens to Zainab at a low point in her life. And when you read the book, you'll see what happens. I won't give that away. But what happens to Zainab is the impetus for Bahira coming out of this shell and saying, I love my friends. I'm going to take a stand for their freedom right where I live. And so Zainab is that character that's based on a lot of my friends that are real atheists that have lost all hope in anything. And so I wrote it on purpose, as she was that one catalyst to help Bahira become that woman freedom fighter.
And like I say, that is definitely, pardon me, that is definitely what really made me sit up and sit a little straighter in my chair, reading that particular passage and what Zainab knew what was going on. And it did wake up Bahira. Indeed, it did bring Bahira out, and it did make Bahira what I call the warrior princess she became.
Yeah. Well, you know what Bahira said? She's sitting there waiting for the bus to go home, and she's heard about all of those things in her classroom, about how Muhammad treated people, and women in particular, with just great dignity, and she's tired of the talking points. She's tired of the old labels. And that's why she could say, writing in her journal, I am a woman. I am more than just a veil. I am more than what I wear. I am someone, someone who has the right to speak her mind, the right to be heard, the right to pursue her dreams, the right to be respected, and the right to be treated as an equal. This is a big part in Bahira's life. When she writes these words down, it becomes part of the play. And you can see the woman freedom fighter rising up finally in Bahira.
Absolutely. I want to go to a bit of a break. I want to come back and continue this discussion. I want to ask you in particular about the character Ryan in the book. But I was wondering, would you like to take a little bit of a break so maybe you can refresh your tea?
I'll be fine, and I appreciate that. And I've got my strawberry lemonade today.
Right on. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a little bit of a break. Everybody, refresh your drinks and do get something cold. It's very, very warm out there today. We are in a heat wave, so please put some ice in your lemonade. We will see you back here in a few minutes. Meanwhile, please enjoy the song I'm going to play. It's by Matt Redman. It's Heart of Worship. And we will see you back here in a second.
When the music fades, all is stripped away, and I simply long and just of endless words, when no one could express how much you deserve, there are no words. Though I'm weak and poor, all I have is yours. Every single breath I give you my all, and I'll bring you more.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that song. That was by Matt Redman. It's called Heart of Worship. With me this afternoon, I have Randy L. Noble, novelist. His latest book, The Rose of Nauruz. Randy, it is, like I say, an honor and a privilege to have you on my show today.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I've enjoyed just every minute, Kel. I thank you so much for your passion for Iranians. It's very, very clear when I talk to you what a love you have for them. And it's so good to connect with someone that's like-minded like that. And I just thank you so much for letting me be a voice. Together, Cal, we are a voice really for them, for hope and freedom. And a lot of people don't understand what goes on in Iran. They hear a lot in the news about the nuclear situation, but they don't know enough about the average person. And that's why I wrote The Rose and the Nehru's, to put a face on Iranians. And they're people just like you and me with hurts and needs. And every one of my friends, without a doubt, every one of the things they ask me to do is to pray for them. And so when I do a program like this, I'm really doing it for them. It's not about me. It's about them. And I just want to make that really clear.
I want to share with you a story about my encounter with a young Iranian man, if I may. This
sure.
is something I know that I'm sure you'll appreciate. When I was in university, I also did volunteer work, and I would tutor students that had recently arrived in Canada. I tutored a young Iranian lad. His name is Arya Sanai. His father was a general under the old regime, the Shah.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Shah of Iran was overthrown, when Iran fell in 1979, his family made arrangements for his children to be smuggled out of the country because his life, of course, would be in peril by then because, I mean, he was
right.
A general with the Shah.
Mm-hmm.
One of those children came to Canada. He was a 14-year-old boy. His English was perfect. He was absolutely a young lad beyond his years in maturity. It was my honor and my privilege to meet him, and he would discuss with me what was going on in Iran. And he would show me photos of his sisters and his parents. They looked like any westernized family you could imagine. The sisters, they had the beautiful long flowing hair, mm. and they were stylish, very pretty young ladies. Arya, of course, was a handsome man. I remember when there was a catastrophe at NASA when the space shuttle exploded in the air, and that was including the school teacher, Christy McCullough, was on that
yes.
particular shuttle. And people were just so upset, and people were beside themselves. And Arya turned to me, and he said, "I know this is a catastrophic event, but how come they don't speak about what's happening to my people in Iran?"
Mm-hmm.
That always stayed with me, Randy. I mm. never, ever let that go. But I always think of Arya Sanai. And when I was reading this book, I immediately went to Arya and his memory. And just to let everybody know, Arya graduated from the University of Toronto. He is now a medical doctor.
Wonderful.
So, I'm very, very proud that I had a chance to meet Arya Sanai in my life. That is pretty much why I have always been very close to the people of Iran, I think, and why I have such an affinity with them is because I tutored a 14-year-old for a year, and he never left my memory, ever. Arya always stays with me.
That is absolutely great. You see, it takes an event, Cal, in your life, like it took the event of Netta's video, Dying in the Streets, and you had the privilege of seeing someone face-to-face that lived there and hearing what went on from them. And that's an incredible, life-changing event, and I'm so glad to hear that he has graduated and he's successful and he lives in a great country, Canada. And I just want to say, in retrospect, how much I admire the Canadian Parliament for passing a bill. On September 1st of this year, they're going to honor the memory of those thousands of Iranian political prisoners slaughtered in 1988. So I want to say thank you to the country you live in, Canada, for the Parliament, this bill called Crimes Against Humanity, honoring the citizens of Iran, the political prisoners that were slaughtered in 1988. So when I think of Arya and I think of his success, I'm very grateful to your country that has already taken a step forward for the good of humanity as well.
We have a very good government right now, definitely. As our Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, is very, very empathetic to the plight of the Iranian people. And I am very honored that he is our leader right now and that he is doing that. But, yeah, I just wanted to say, though, Arya, like, he kind of piqued me. But like I say, giants tend to go to sleep, and I went to sleep for quite a while after that. It wasn't until I started rediscovering what was going on in Iran and Netta being the catalyst for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Arya always stayed with me. He was always in the back of my mind. But like I say, giants have a tendency to go to sleep again, and I did. It was Netta that reawoke my spirit and my empathy for the people of Iran. And something else, too, in what the Canadian government is doing in honor of these people is that we also had an incident. We had one of our very own Canadian journalists who was murdered. She was thrown in the prison. She was thrown in Evan Prison, the most notorious prison I think people will ever hear of on this planet is Evan Prison. And her name was Sahar Kazemi. She was a photojournalist, and she was in Iran, and she was taking photographs, and she was taken into custody. She was taken to Evin prison, where she was subsequently raped and murdered and buried in an unmarked grave. And that always had been a very, very, very brightly lit point in Canada. We were so upset about that.
Yes, and do you know, also, I want to mention to you, while you're saying about people in Evin prison, there is a blogger who had a website who was falsely accused of having a pornographic website. His name is Saeed Malekpour. He's a Canadian. He's in Evin prison, and his dear daughter lives there in Canada, Marion Malekpour, that keeps his story alive. And so when I think of Canadians now, I'm also wanting to think of Saeed as well. There is another Saeed I want to mention that is a dear friend of mine through NGMA. It's Saeed Abedini, who is in Evin prison. He is an Iranian pastor. He lived in Iran. He met his wife, NGMA, in Iran. They are both American citizens. And he has been in Evin prison, tortured for his faith as a Christian. But the American Center for Law and Justice has sent out a petition, Kel, to speak out for this man, Saeed Abedini, my good friend in Evin prison, and there's making great progress in getting over 600,000 signatures. His wife just came back from Geneva, Switzerland, speaking on his behalf before the United Nations. And I just want to remind your listeners, please speak up for Saeed Abedini in Evin prison. All you do that is go to savesaeed.org and sign the petition. And since you're speaking of Evin prison, I just wanted to mention in passing, if I could, two of my dear friends who inspired me in my writings as well as Netta. Mariam and Marzea wrote a book called Captive in Iran. They spent 259 days in Iran's Evin prison, as you mentioned. Their book is phenomenal. They are such an inspiration. They're my Facebook friends. And they spent that 259 days, Kel, not just thinking of their problems. They spent it ministering, praying, and reaching out with the love of Christ to Iranian prostitutes, to Iranian political prisoners, and all kinds of different stripes of people in Evin prison. And they were miraculously freed 3 years ago, and they are living here in the United States. So, yes, Evin prison is a horrible place. And I really highly recommend their book, Captive in Iran. If people want to know what it's like to live in a place like that, read their book, please.
Absolutely. I want to get to your blog in a minute, but like I say, I really wanted to talk about this character in the book, Ryan. How much of an influence does Ryan play in this book and how he affects Bahira? And who is Ryan based on?
This is a hard question. I wonder what you're thinking right now. I mean, could you possibly think it's got something to do with me? Well, you know, this was a struggle. This was a struggle. I thought, do I really want to put me in this book? But then I begin to think, Kel, this is a real life situation. I talked to Iranians on Facebook. This is real life. And so I thought, what can I do to give Behera some hope in this book? She's going to become this woman freedom fighter caught in the middle of this place in Iran. Where does she get her help and support from? So I thought, why not bring myself into this book under a different name? Because it really happens every day I talk to them. And Behera has a lifeline, someone that stands and supports her. And that's just like me. I struggled with this, whether to put it in or not, and I don't know why I did, but in the end I did. Because I wanted to show that there are Americans, Canadians, that love Iranians. And the way to get that message into the Rose of Nauruz was to put a real experience, a video chat. These are real things that happened. And this is what carries Behera through her darkest moments, is her Christian friend.
I think Ryan was a very wonderful character. He's a very rich character. He is so empathetic, and he is so he understands. He understands what Behera is going through. And
well, that's
his
the
only
strive,
yeah, his only strivation is for him to help her find peace, and he does that. The Ryan's reaction to Behera in the end is heart wrenching. It is because Behera does become a warrior princess, and Ryan is very worried for her. So it's heart-wrenching to experience Ryan's emotions over his dear friend Behera and what she's doing and what she's accomplishing. It's a very, very intertwined. The relationship between Behera and Ryan is very, very emotional. It's very deep. So I really did want to bring up Ryan, and I was, guess who I had in my mind while I was reading? You bet, yeah.
Well,
and I think you did it beautifully.
Yeah. Thanks. How does Ryan deal with this, what happens to Behera? He wants to bring something good, something beautiful out of the ashes of her suffering. My next endeavor book I'm writing is the follow-up to The Promise. It's called Beauty from the Ashes. And this is what Ryan does in The Rose of Nauruz. How can I best tell the world her story? Well, when you read The Rose of Nauruz, you're going to find out. I don't want to spoil it. But this is what he does. He wants to say, just like I did with Netta, Netta, I hear your voice, and I want to do something to honor you so Iranians will never forget you. And this is what Ryan does with Behera.
And it's done wonderfully. Like I say, ladies and gentlemen, please, you have to read this book. And actually, read all of Randy's books. But this one in particular we're discussing today, The Rose of Nauruz, was a book that really touched me. It's a book that jumps out at you, and I am not saying this because I have the author on the phone with me. I sought out Randy. I said, Randy, please come on my show and discuss this book because it is, if I was Oprah Winfrey,
wow.
It would be Oprah's pick.
Okay,
this
well,
is how much
nice.
I love this book. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're not in the chat room or if you can't see the screen, if you're listening on other devices, which I know you are, please, you can purchase the book at Amazon.com, and there are other fine book distributors. In a moment, we're going to discuss Randy's blog that he has, and I have some really interesting comments to make about that because I read this blog, and I thought it was just absolutely fantastic. We are down to 10 minutes, but you know what, Randy? I was wondering, would you like to stay with me maybe for another 20 minutes or so where I can extend the show?
That's fine. I'm yours today. This is my day off from work, Kel. There's no constraints. I'm yours.
Oh, that is great. I want to thank you for that. I really appreciate this. Like I say, I am just so excited to have you on the show because I know that my listeners will love this. And if we can get the word out about this beautiful story that you have written, then my work is done, sir. But what I'm going to do then, in that case, I'm going to take just another quick 2-minute break and let you put more ice in that tea of yours.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, everybody, to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy, and my guest today is Randy L. Noble, author of The Rose of Nauruz. Randy, I played that song for Netta on my last show, and I just felt inclined to play it again today because it is so fitting. Of course, it is violins.
Yes.
Have you ever had a chance to speak with Caspian Macon and... Do you know how he feels about this book?
Caspian has not told me directly. He said when I first met him back in January that it was beautiful. And he says, I don't know English very well, so I'm struggling through it. But I did a special program about Netta's birthday, her 30th birthday if she had lived, back in January. And I showed a picture that Caspian had taken of himself gazing at a picture of Netta with candles in the background. And it was such a beautiful photographic tribute to Netta for her 30th birthday if she was still alive. And I did a special video on this, and he liked it so much that he put it out on YouTube, and it got thousands of hits. So I take it to mean from Caspian he's very grateful that I cared so much about his fiance. And he's a man with such integrity, Kel. He's constantly out there fighting for people's freedoms. He has a wonderful website, and it's mostly in Persian, so I can't read it. But he's a fighter and a champion for human rights. He does appreciate the book, and I just hope he passes it on to his friends, because this is what it's about, getting the book out into the hands of those that can speak for Iran.
Yeah, Caspian is a very, very wonderful man, and I am so glad that he resides rather close to me, in fact.
Uh-huh.
And I have spoken with him on the internet. We talked quite a bit over the last 2 weeks because I was approaching him about doing a special for Netta for June 20th. He was very gracious with his time, and he sent me that beautiful, beautiful YouTube that he had made for Netta to commemorate International Netta Day. And it is International Netta Day, ladies and gentlemen. June 20th is International Netta Day. So please always remember the memory of Netta on June 20th. He is a very grim man at times. That man, he smiles very gently. He has a gentle smile, but he doesn't laugh. I don't think that he will ever find peace until what Netta was trying to accomplish is actually achieved, because what happened to Netta will never leave him. And I know it's very difficult for Caspian to carry on some days, but he does. He keeps Netta's memory alive, and people like you and me, we do likewise. I think that Caspian is very, very akin to people like us. Hey, Randy?
Right, and I remember on that special day you mentioned, June 20th, I put on my timeline a picture of Netta in the blog, and then I love this video that he made. It's narrated in Persian, but it has subtitles in English. And it's, of course, a call to boycott the election, and it was talking about Netta. What a superb job he did of that. I have a friend, and I can't mention her name because she doesn't want me to. She also lives in Canada. They're very good friends together, and she also did a video tribute to Netta. Netta will never be forgotten for you and me and Caspian, and I hope for thousands of other people, because no matter what happens in Iran, she is the symbol. She's the Rose of Nowruz.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I want to move on and talk about your blog.
Okay.
This is a fantastic blog, The Cross in the Desert. And I have put the links up in the show highlights, ladies and gentlemen. So when you're listening in archive, they're there. They're broken. For some reason, I cannot get them to directly connect. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to put all the links proper in my blog, and you can find me at redfoxblogger.blogspot.com. Later on today, I will have everything proper right there. So if you're having trouble getting to these sites, rest assured, I will have them in my blog later on today for you, redfoxblogger.blogspot.com. But this is a great blog that you have, Randy, The Cross in the Desert. And it's great. I was reading your latest entry, Mullahs Don't Change, Justin Bieber for President of Iran, as you alluded to earlier.
Yeah.
You are absolutely bang on with this. This is fantastic. But there are so many entries in this blog, people, that you have to check it out. It is wonderful. There's one in particular, of course, that stays with me, and that is the tribute to Netta. And you have a video in there. It's Remembering Netta, the Angel of Iran, and that is from Monday, May 27th of 2013. So, people, when I put the link in my blog, please scroll down. You don't have to scroll down very far. It's there. It's very moving, though. But tell me about your blog in general. How did you start your blog? What inspired you to do it?
Well,
or,
my first initial
reason... Do I need to even ask that?
Well, it first began as a page of friendship, of dialogue between Christians and Muslims. And I just throw this in, since you didn't mention it. My newest book, Tears in a Bottle, Seeing Through Their Eyes, is a way to dialogue with Muslims without building barriers and talking about the violence and the things in the world that we can talk about, but let's talk about what matters the most. And so this was a page originally dedicated as a dialogue page for Christians to talk with Muslims from heart. But it slowly evolved into being a voice of hope and freedom for Iranians. And that's kind of where it's at right now. I wonder if I can take a minute, if you don't mind. In one particular blog, I asked my friend Atifi, please tell me what it's like to live in Iran. she returned an email to me. This was just after The Rose of Nauruz was published through CreateSpace. I just never have read anything that so broke me inside. Like you mentioned, crying. I was at work when I read this. When she described the daily life of an Iranian woman, it broke me because it's so real. And remember, Atefi is a big inspiration for my book. And I want to take just a minute to read to you what she said about living in Iran, because this is who this program is about.
Please
it's about
do.
Them. Atefi was asked, describe your life on a daily basis as a student in Iran. She says, imagine a day when you wake up and dress as normal as you always do. You are fresh to start a day, but as you reach your university facility, your phone rings. It's the security guard. They have been watching you talk to your male classmates, so you are called to the discipline committee to prove that you aren't involved with that boy in violation of the Islamic rules. You never can prove that, and you get something like a note in your graduation certificate stating that you had an illegitimate relationship with your classmate. Another day, as you enter the facility, a woman wearing a chador, and that is like a dress from head to toe, covering the head, everything except the face. She's wearing a chador. She stops you at the door, and she says, and she asks, what's that makeup you're wearing? Again, discipline committee. Day number three, your mobile rings. It's the discipline committee. Miss, why have you got a Facebook account? Why aren't you wearing a hijab in your profile picture? Again, discipline committee. Have you got a boyfriend? Who are your friends? Do your friends have boyfriends? Do they have sex with their boyfriends? Do your friends stay at your boyfriend's houses? Then they ask you to spy for them in the dorm and report to them anything that happens there. And if you say anything against Islam or any of the political figures, or if you insult them, your parents won't ever see you anymore. You are graduating and you're working now. You've made it this far. Believe it or not, some of them do. 8 a.m., you go out of the house, and when you reach downtown, the Ghastiyar Shah, the morality police, stops you. Again, the same questions. They take you to a police station. You sit next to men who have been arrested in the street. They take a picture of you while you are holding a paper with your name on it, exactly like a criminal. They treat you like a prostitute, bombarding you with their words and accusations until you burst into tears. Then they call your home and ask your parents to bring a longer manteau, that is a dress. Okay. Then you have to sign a commitment paper which says if they see you on the street and they don't like your appearance, you will have to appear in court, and the vicious cycle continues for the rest of your life. These are the daily routines for Iranian girls here, and when you wish to free yourself by migrating somewhere else, the sanctions and poor economical situation won't allow you to pay the primary expenses. Then you feel there is nothing called God. There's no justice. Just imagine a hot day in summer when you have to wear a manteau, a scarf, and then you try to work. You can't even imagine the way we live here. You can't imagine. No, you never can. What do you say?
That is absolutely overwhelming. And you're right. What do you say? How do you respond to that? These are people living this. These are human beings living this. And you read these testimonials. These are men and women who know what freedom means, what freedom is, and they are not receiving freedom. You read these testimonials, and it just breaks your heart. And I don't know how you do it, Randy. You do this blog, The Cross in the Desert, and you record everything. You take in so much. I'm wondering, does it ever tax you emotionally? Like, some days
yes.
I do these stories, and I just burst into tears. Like, I am always fighting for the Muslim people. I cannot stand Islam. I make no bones about my show. I make no bones about my blog, about how I feel about Islam. But I always make it very, very clear. I have a very delineated point. There is a difference between Muslims and Islam.
Yes.
I know what Muslims undergo. I know what they're living underneath, this thumb of Islam. Islam is an evil entity. And these people are trying to break free. They're trying to reform. They're trying to bring democracy within their countries. Mm-hmm. They're trying so very hard. But it just seems that Islam, in particular, is the big giant in the room pushing them down. So when you do these stories and when you research these stories and you speak to people, and in particular your very close friends from Iran, how do you get through it some days?
Well, the only way for me, Cal, is I take it before my God and Savior Jesus, who is the reason I do this book, who is the reason I do these programs, and I lay it at his feet, and I ask and pray that he will so work in their lives, that he will bring freedom to them, that he will bring peace in the midst of oppression, that he will bring light in the midst of darkness. I can't handle that, and neither can you. It's oppressive. It's a weight, because we care. We genuinely care about these people. For me, Cal, I have to come to him in prayer, and he's the only way I get through it, because to listen to their heartaches every day and the questions that they ask, where is God in all of this? Why doesn't he answer our prayers? It hurts. It really, really hurts.
It is very hard to have to listen to their saying that, where is God? Well, God is here. God is with us. And I don't think, Randy, I always say that God never gives us more than we can bear. We see that in the spirit of the Iranian people in particular, as we are discussing today. But I see that everywhere. I don't think God gives us any more than we can bear. Mm-hmm. But it is burdensome some days. It is very burdensome. That's when, in myself in particular, this is when I kind of retreat. I go into my corner and I contemplate and I pray very hard. And I ask God, please get me through this. Get me through this. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I do wake up. There is a new day and there is a new refreshment in my spirit. And I can go on. And I can go on and fight the good fight for the good people, for the good people around the planet that are living underneath oppression and are trying to break free the chains that some stupid entity has thrust upon them. Like I say, I make a very clear distinction between the Muslim people and Islam. Islam is not a religion in my eyes. Islam is a political entity. It's very violent, and it's very, very oppressive. And we see these examples via Netta Sultan. We see these examples via Caspian Macon. And we see these examples in your very, very fine book, like I say, that brought me to tears. We see them. We see the oppression through the characters of Zainab, Bahira. We see Ryan reaching out and trying to help. We see Amir, Hadi. All these characters jump out to you. These characters are saying to you, this is my life. This is not the life I envisioned for myself. This is not the life I want for my children or my grandchildren. Please listen to me. I have a voice. I have something to say, and I need your help. And I am more than honored to do that. And if I even do it on my little radio show here, at least I'm standing up for these people. And Randy, so are you. When you write these novels and you get the word out and people read your books and they read these words, you must feel like at least I did something today.
Yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying, and I'm sitting here thinking through how do I respond to their hurts. You know what it does for me? I'm sure this does it for you. We have real problems in our life. We have financial problems, struggles with this and that. When I find myself starting to complain, and I think of my friends, there's no problem. Suddenly it's gone.
I do that too.
And I feel that their lifestyle speaks so strongly to me. I'm so thankful for my freedom, and I feel just so desperately bad for them that when I have a problem and I start to complain, what nullifies all of that emotion and outrage is when I think of them. And every time I catch myself, I say, you know what? For every little problem that you're suffering through, it's nothing compared to them.
Absolutely. Because you and I, we don't wake up in the morning wondering whether or not we're going to be stopped by the morality police, as it were. We don't have to worry about sitting on a hot bus in the middle of a sweltering summer day and our hijab is itching at our heads and we cannot remove it because we are going to be arrested otherwise. We don't have to worry about that. We don't have to worry about whether or not we have a little bit of ankle showing beneath our kneecaps. We don't have to worry about that at all. That's not our problem. No, we have to worry about, you know, am I going to pay this bill this week? Well, gee, if I can't pay that bill this week, oh, well, you know what? It's not like my whole world is going to collapse. But if I show a little bit of ankle in Sharia-controlled Middle East, that's and in Iran, that can get me thrown in Evan prison. Those are the real worries, not my worries.
We have the freedom to assemble and to disagree with the government. We have the freedom to protest. We have the freedom and to speak out. And they try that in Iran, and they're arrested, interrogated, put in solitary confinement, and under certain circumstances, they're executed. You have no freedom in Iran to express yourself. I want to touch back on something you said earlier, how you deal with this. And I told you, explained to you how I did. When I wrote my last blog about my friend Teffi sharing what she thought about the upcoming election, and this beautiful psalm came to me, and it sums up what I believe is a perfect answer to your question. When I cry out to God, I know something of the character of my God, that he cares for every detail of their life. I tell them that when I chat with them, that God cares for every detail of your life. This beautiful psalm, I think, sums up what I believe God thinks about the situation in Iran. He will rescue the poor when they cry to him. He will help the oppressed who have no one to defend them. He feels pity for the weak and needy, and he will rescue them. He will redeem them from oppression and violence, for their lives are precious to him. And that's the beautiful Psalm 72, verses 12 through 14. I really feel that's the heart of God for the Iranian people. It may not look like that anything is happening, but guess what? He has given you and me, Kel, and many other people, the ability to speak for them. And I think in so many ways, the message is getting out, and God will use these programs to bring hope and freedom to them.
And I can't even top that. I think that that is beautifully said. This is why I am so grateful that you're on my program today and sharing with my listeners what you're doing, how you're doing it, why you're doing it, and what we can do about it as well. We really have to stand up, and we have to pay attention to what's going on to the people, ladies and gentlemen, the people underneath the thumb of Islam. Iran is one example. Iran is very close to my heart. Iran is a beautiful, beautiful country, rich in heritage, rich in history. And to see it undergoing such awful regimes is heartbreaking to me because I know these people. They live in my heart. They're human beings. They need us, and we have to be there for them. We are over here in the West, and we sit here, and like Randy brought up, worry about your bills. Fine, of course. Have your everyday concerns. Absolutely, we must. But also remember that there are everyday concerns on the other part of the planet, and they do not deal with the idiosyncrasies of whether or not that bill is going to be paid this week.
Yeah.
They are dealing with very real life-threatening issues, and that includes if you're showing too much skin or if you're wearing too much makeup, your daughter can be bundled into a van and taken to Evan prison and interrogated, put in solitary confinement. Your son is at a protest to protest the latest elections because he thinks it's a fraud. And he's probably right. And you know what? He is right. He's bundled off to Evan Prison, and he's held in solitary confinement, and you may not see him ever again. There are real concerns on this planet, ladies and gentlemen. And me, I try to bring them forward, and people like Randy Noble bring them forward through his extraordinary writings. And I really do encourage people to visit his blog, The Cross in the Desert. Randy, you write everything in here. This is probably one of the best blogs I've come across.
Oh, well, thank you. I've just started in this, Kel. I want to just mention, if it's okay with you, my wife, Becky, is a political blogger that writes some of the best political blogs I've ever read, and it's only been in the last year. I'm so encouraged by my dear wife, Becky, and I want to say something good. I shouldn't forget her. She writes beautiful blogs. It's called The Conservative Cauldron, blogspot.com, and I just want to say to your listeners, we have a unique marriage. I'm the Christian in the family, and she's the Wiccan. And she's a very conservative-thinking Wiccan. Let me tell you, she's not like anyone you know. So, but you mentioned something very nice about my blogs, and I wanted to throw that in real quick because she writes good
ones, too.
Absolutely.
And can you relate that blog again?
It's called The Conservative Cauldron. blogspot.com. Let me tell you what, you know, you're a conservative thinking person, and we deal with the issues of our government here every day in our blogs, especially Becky, specifically what Obama is doing to destroy our planet. I hate to say it, it sounds very graphic, but he is. And she takes him to task in her blogs in a very constructive way, not just pointing out the things that are wrong, but also saying, here are the things we can do to bring change. Here's a plan that we can use to make things different in our country. So I just wanted to say that about her.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic, and this is the format and the forum for you to share that. I will actually be in touch with you to get the link proper so I can put it in my blog as well. Absolutely.
Thank
you. You bet. We are down to our last 13 minutes.
Okay.
Is there anything that you would like to share with my listeners in terms of the book itself? Where can people find the book?
Well, there are several places.
I've already said, but you go ahead and you tell me. There's more places than I have listed.
And I don't think you have one of these stores in Canada, but it's only in the store that I work at. I work at a place called Family Christian Bookstore here in Canada.
I mean,
here in the United States. And it's on the shelf there. But, you know, I send this book out, like I mentioned, Kel, on a PDF file. And you know what? If someone really wants this, I'll be glad to send it to them on a file. And it's not going to charge them anything for it, because the message of the Rose of Nauru's, the dreams of hope and freedom, is something I want everyone to read. And it's also found at Amazon.com or the Create Space Bookstore. Either place, you can go up and just type in the Rose of Nauru's, N-O-W-R-U-Z. It'll come right to it. Or just type in my name, Randy L. Noble. It'll come right to a list of my books. And that's the easiest and best way to find it. You can come to my Facebook page. Just friend request me. I'll send it to you as well. The idea is to get the book into people's hands. And you know, I don't know what to say. I'm so humbled by the good, kind words you have about my book. If it can make a drastic if it can affect your life in the way that it has and make an impact on your life, I hope it makes the impact on other ones' lives as well, Kel, and that it will drive them to their knees in prayer and speaking out for my friends. So those are the ways you can get in touch with obtaining the book. And like I said, I'll be glad to send it to anyone if they want in a file. But I'm also having a book signing this weekend and next weekend for the Rose of Nauru's. And I wanted to mention, I am showing the film A Death in Tehran, the PBS documentary about Netta Sultan. What really, the last book signing I had about this was 6 months ago in February. You should see the faces of customers coming into the bookstore looking for Bibles and other things. We have ties and jewelry and all kinds of things there. And then they come down to this table and they see this video of this young Iranian woman dying in the streets, and they stand there They don't know what to say, and it gives me the opportunity to talk to them. So at these next two book signings, I'm going to be showing, again, a tribute to Netta. And I think it's a fine documentary. It features a lot of Iranian people in it. It's really well done. It's very accurate. And, again, we're getting the message out through Netta.
I think that is wonderful. And one day I'm going to meet you and bring my copy so you can sign it for me.
You know what? I'll tell you what. No problem. I'm going to get you a copy. And when we get off the phone here, you just give me your address. I'm going to make sure after my book signings that you get one. Because I know it's a little difficult to sit at your computer day and night. I like e-books. My books are on Kindle. But there's nothing like the feel and the smell of holding a book in your hand.
Oh, I love hard copy.
Yeah,
I got to have my hard copy.
So you're going to get one. No problem.
Oh, Randy, thank you very much.
No problem at all. I love doing this. It's the joy of my life to send it out. But there's nothing like holding it in your hands, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, that's one thing I love to do, too, is I love reading books. I always have a book in my hand. As a matter of fact, sometimes I have two, maybe three books on the go.
Wow.
I just finished reading a book about Secretariat, one of my favorite racehorses in the whole wide world by William Nack.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just love reading books. I read everything and anything I can get my hands on. But, Randy, I want to tell you, it was an honor to have you again. Again, I have to say, it was an honor to have you on the show today. I really am looking forward to your next book. Believe me, I can't put your books down. These are fantastic novels that you write. You're a very prolific writer, and you very much bring the characters to life. I could practically smell the rain when Zainab was walking down the street. I could practically feel the searing of the sun on Bahira as she was sitting on the bus. Ladies and gentlemen, please, this is, like I say, probably one of the best novels I have come across in a long, long time. Please go to Amazon.com, Randy L. Noble. You can find it there. And please visit Randy's blog as well, The Cross in the Desert. You will be profoundly amazed and very pleased at what you find there. Randy, it was an absolute pleasure. Please come back again.
I'd be glad to. And my newest book, Tears in the Bottle, is about a friendship between a Christian and a Muslim, and I hope that's well received. The one I'm working on, Kel, is a sequel to The Promise. It's about the dark days after the Holocaust of Jewish people getting their lives back together. And it's called Beauty from the Ashes, The Promise Fulfilled. And hopefully and prayerfully, it may be out by January of next year. I haven't started writing it, but that's coming up in the next month. So I hope
please.
That.
please come back for that.
I will.
My
I would be glad
would
to
love,
you.
Love.
You've
love
been such
that.
A kind host, and you're such a passionate person. You have a real heart for Iranians. It's my pleasure to be on your show more than anything.
Randy, thank you so very much. I very much appreciate. And you have spent so much time with me today. I extended the show, and you were so gracious with your time. I am forever going to have you on my my rotal dial. Randy, please come back. Randy, you have a standing invitation, an open invitation to come back to the show anytime you like.
Well,
I know
I will
my
take
listeners
you up
will
that.
Be enthralled. Absolutely.
I
well,
hope a lot of people, Kel, get to hear this. Yeah, I hope a lot of people can. I'm going to have this up on my page, Kel, so that people can listen to it. And no matter how much time they can always go back to it. And I'll have it on my Facebook page, so hopefully you'll have this link available so they can hear what we have to say.
Absolutely. What will happen is that upon the show closing, Blog Talk Radio will take it, and they will probably have it ready for archival listen within the next 15 minutes after I finish taping. So it should be available for archive listen within 15, maybe 20 minutes after I finish taping the program.
Right.
And like
right.
I say, well, ladies and gentlemen, you have to read this book. Like I say, it really changed my life. Like, Randy, I can't say enough. It's just such a great novel. It's such a great book. And it's a, like I say, you really want to know about the plight of the Iranian people, ladies and gentlemen, read Randy's book. Read this book, The Rose and Aruz, please. Randy, on that note, I'm going to let you go, but I will be in touch with you via Skype a little later.
Yes, that's fine. I'll be here.
All right. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, my guest today, Randy L. Noble, author of The Rose of Nowruz, available on Amazon.com. Please get it. Like I say, it's a great read, and like I say, the characters, they will live in your soul. They're very good. Randy, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your graciousness and your compassion, and I can see why you do Blog Talk Radio. You have a tremendous spirit of communication. I so appreciate your passion again, and I highly recommend your Blog Talk. I think that this is a big event in your life that you have a show. You can bring on guests, Kel, and communicate subjects and touch people's hearts. You're doing a great service. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a great night.
You too. I'll meet you later on Skype. What time do you want to meet?
Oh, any time. Right after this, in fact.
Okay. I'm going to come off this.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that is the beauty of what I do here on Blog Talk Radio, is that I make connections, I meet people, I meet people that impact my life, and hopefully they impact yours. I read this book, and I had to get in touch with the author, and I begged him, please come on my show and share this book with us. It is, like I say, it was a catalyst, another catalyst in my life reading this novel. What a wonderful man to spend so much time with me on my show. Now, that reminds me, I have program announcements I said that I would make at the beginning of the program. Kel is going back to primetime. Yes. I'm going to keep the Monday afternoon show, 3 p.m. I'm going to keep that time slot, but you will not hear me on Thursdays at 3 p.m. any longer. You will hear me instead on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. That's right. So please mark that in your calendars. Kelly is going to change her show around. She's going back to primetime. I'm back. So you can hear me now at 3 p.m. Monday afternoons and 7 p.m. Friday evenings. That's Eastern Time. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank you all who listen in the chat room. I want to thank you all who listen on other devices. And I want to thank you all that listen in archive, and I know you do. I also want to thank you in particular for listening to my special, Remembering Netta. That was probably one of my most popular shows that I have done in this time slot. I am honored that you enjoyed it. I hope that I will always bring you the news. I hope that I will always be a little entertaining. I really do love you guys. I really do appreciate your support. And I know you sometimes there's days where you're listening and you're going, oh, there she goes again. But you know what? That's just the way I roll, and you don't seem to mind. You're very kind-hearted people out there. And I want to keep going with it. So there you go. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you guys have a great afternoon. I will see you on Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And remember, it's your country. Take it back. Bye-bye.